Greetings. Thanks for listening to Bear Soup. We have a brilliant show bubbling up for you this week in the Bear Soup Hot Tub, so listen up, bears. First, The Cult of Masculinity by Arthur Evans from White Crane Journal's 20th anniversary issue. Bearapalooza, 7th anniversary. Shoutouts and the usual audio woofanany. We're locked and loaded, so stand back. You're just in time for Bear Soup.
Now that I understand the beauty of what they left to hand me down, when you need a place to live and no one understands you, and all you want to do is to cry out loud, but you don't know how.
No way. Welcome to Bear Soup. News, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. This is your host, Ron Serratia, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the interwebs from southeastern coastal Connecticut, wishing you all a very happy, fun, and safe Valentine's Day, President's Day, Chinese New Year, and whatever. You're listening to episode number 66 of the Bear Soup Podcast, streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Bear Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. Access the Bear Soup archives through the Bear Soup tab on ronserratia.com. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I'm recording this stark naked in a steamy outdoor hot tub, because that's what the rubber duckies are for. Clothing optional. Bear Soup is sponsored by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books. Here's an article called The Cult of Masculinity, written by Arthur Evans, which originally appeared in issue number 11 of White Crane Journal and reprinted in their 20th anniversary issue that came out last year. The first section of the article, The Cult of Masculinity, is Macho, Macho Man, I Want to Be a Macho Man. What deep belief do your parents, your sexual partners, and your high school gym teacher all have in common? No doubt the very same belief endlessly pushed by pop singers like the Village People, counterculture heroes like Abbie Hoffman, and actor presidents like Ronald Reagan. Men should always look and act as masculine as possible. Through every conceivable means of social influence, we have all been constantly reminded through our entire lives that only a man who is masculine embodies the ideal of what a real man ought to be. And even more, that only a man who is masculine is sexy. In view of this relentless conditioning, we shouldn't be all surprised to find that nearly every man in our society, from the homeless man beating his wife in the streets to the president planning wars in the White House, proudly insists on his own masculinity. Indeed, a great many men in this society would sooner admit to being rapists or murderers than to being deficient in masculinity. What is this charmed quality called masculinity which so many men highly covet? Is it like a person's taste in clothes, a learned form of behavior? Or is it more deeply embedded in physical nature, like one's natural hair color? Is it purely personal and subjective, or does it objectively reflect broad historical and political patterns? Most important, how does it relate to us as gay men in our sexual and spiritual lives? The following article will touch briefly on each of these questions. Pants and dresses versus penises and vaginas. The word masculinity, like the word up, is a correlative term. That is, it makes sense only in the context of a term of opposite meaning to which it is co-related. Just as the words up and down are opposites which must be understood in terms of each other, so masculinity can only be understood in terms of its opposite, femininity. So we may define masculinity as that which properly characterizes men as opposed to women, and femininity as that which characterizes women as opposed to men. Which is just another way of saying the obvious, that masculinity hangs on the sexual differences between men and women. But what is not so obvious is the fact that sexual difference is itself a very slippery concept, since it can refer to either of two very different things. One, that which pertains to one's sex because of conventional expectations of behavior, such as wearing pants or a dress, sex as sex role, or two, that which pertains to one's sex by virtue of physical plumbing, such as having a penis or a vagina, sex as gender. As it turns out, masculinity has its roots in both sex role and gender, so we must look briefly at both sex role masculinity and gender masculinity. Sex role masculinity. Anthropologists have long known that every human society makes a sharp distinction in the types of behavior that it conventionally expects of each sex. Although the exact details vary considerably from place to place, every society makes some such distinctions, which it vigorously reinforces by socially conditioning its individual members from birth to death. How one is expected to dress, work, cry, laugh, and die depends to some degree in every human society on one's sex. Even in societies which validate various forms of cross-dressing, as is often the case with shamans, the validation also occurs as an exception within a greater cultural context of sex-based behavioral expectations. Further, the network of established sex roles in any given society always serves some greater social function besides sexuality itself. So, for example, in a society whose economy depends heavily on packs of errant male hunters who must spend long periods stalking prey away from their home villages, men will be conditioned to regard skill in hunting and a predisposition for loner behavior as masculine traits. Indeed, everyone in such a society will be encouraged to view a man who embodies such traits as more sexy, other things being equal, than a man who does not. In this way, the sex role masculinity of male hunters pertains to more than mere sexuality. By identifying certain hunting-related traits with male sexiness, the society's sex role masculinity reinforces the behavior required among men for the survival of a society whose economy is based on hunting. As a result of its association with various social functions, the sexual urge powerfully motivates most human beings in most societies to embrace eagerly and unthinkingly the particular sex roles which are conventionally associated with their own sex, since no one wants to appear unsexy. Although striking society-wide effects always arise from this association, they are not the results of any conscious social planning. It's just that the different societies emerge with different roles for the sexes, and the roles become eroticized by virtue of the sexes that generally occupy them. Hence, through sex role masculinity and sex role femininity, human sexuality comes to discharge far more than a merely sexual function in any given society. The patriarchal connection. The fact that individual sex roles have a broad cultural import is well accepted among anthropologists. But this observation has recently come to appear in a whole new light as a result of discoveries made during the last few decades by feminist researchers. This new research suggests that in the earliest stages of human history, the sexes had a roughly equal status in terms of the economic, political, and religious influence reserved to each. But later, in Europe around 4000 before the current era, a series of great social upheavals ensued. The patriarchal revolution, which finally resulted in the creation of highly stratified, male-dominated societies. Thereafter, men held sway over women, children, animals, and nature, either through direct physical violence or through the institutionalized violence of two new engines of social coercion, the state and the army, to be supplanted in later epochs by the church, the university, and the business corporation. As part of the patriarchal revolution, sometimes after about 2000 before the current era, wave after wave of ferocious, fair-skinned invaders, all speaking various dialects of the Indo-European family of languages, surged out of the Caucasus region into Europe and India. In most of the territories they entered, they plundered and destroyed the indigenous cultures, creating a huge new caste of slaves from the invaded society's lower classes, and intermarrying with the upper classes. As a result of this turmoil, a new world order eventually emerged, consisting of an ever-warring array of male-dominated city-states whose political power rested on militarism and white economic power rested on slavery. In the 16th century of the current era, some 3,500 years after it first began, the cycle of Indo-European violence repeated itself on an even more ferocious scale. Hordes of patriarchal invaders surged forth from Europe into the Americas and Africa, enslaving the native people, annihilating, at least in the Americas, nearly all traces of the native cultures, and everywhere devastating the natural environment. Often euphemistically called the Voyages of Discovery. This explosion was in fact the second great pulse of the Indo-European phase of the patriarchal revolution. Its effects continue to be felt to this very day. Butch, butcher, butchery. But what does the 6,000-year history of patriarchal violence have to do with our discussion above about sex role masculinity? Everything, because patriarchal history has profoundly conditioned what is now regarded around the planet as appropriate and even sexy behavior for the human male. As a result of the patriarchal revolution, sexual masculinity has typically come to reflect violent and authoritarian themes, such as a fascination with domination, hierarchy, and bondage, the eroticizing of pain and punishment, an enthusiasm for wearing uniforms or uniform-like clothing, a fascination with guns, clubs, whips, or instruments of torture, and contempt for any signs among men of any traits usually associated with women. As with a so-called primitive tribe of hunters in the Eurasian steppes, so with the developed United States. Its standards of sexual masculinity serve to eroticize the very kind of male behavior most needed to sustain the dominant social and economic order. In the steppes, the rule of hunting clans, in the United States, the regime of militarized industrialism. Men who get a thrill out of putting on uniforms and violating or killing other men on command. This is the highest ideal of, quote, the real man that now prevails in the United States and all other countries under the sway of militaristic industrial civilization, regardless of whether they are capitalist, communist, or fascist. Every one of us who grows up in a so-called advanced industrial society has been repeatedly exposed since birth to social conditioning that reinforces such an ideal of masculinity, although not every man has internalized it to the same degree. This internalization of the ideals of patriarchal masculinity, successively reinforced from one generation to the next, is responsible for a number of the male archetypes, as some call them, that can be found in both individual male psyches and collective myth. Far from being mysterious, ghostly presences existing in their own right, these archetypes are merely the psychological effects of an internalized patriarchal masculinity. Gender masculinity. Just as one kind of masculinity, sex role masculinity, corresponds to sexuality as a cultural and historical construct, so we have seen that a second kind, gender masculinity, corresponds to sexuality in its purely physical aspects. More specifically, gender masculinity simply means the possession of certain primary and secondary sexual characteristics. Primary, such as penis and testicles. Secondary, such as facial hair, heavier bone structure, larger muscle mass, and so on. Since every man possesses primary and secondary sex characteristics, the measure of one's gender masculinity is a quantitative matter, not qualitative, as in sex role masculinity. So, for example, a man having a longer penis, larger testicles, a more hairy face, heavier bones, and more massive muscles than another is regarded as having greater gender masculinity. But if the second man, although physically less well endowed, is more domineering and sadistic in his behavior, then he will be regarded, at least in militaristic societies, as having greater sexual masculinity. So in effect, man's overall masculinity rating will always be a blend of his quantitative gender masculinity and his qualitative sexual masculinity. Naturally, then, the highest ideal will be found in the combined best of both kinds of masculinity, which in patriarchal, militaristic societies is exemplified by a big-boned, long-penised, muscular sadist in uniform-like clothing. Testosterone poisoning. Although the distinction we have made between sex role masculinity and gender masculinity is a useful one, it becomes blurred in real life. The prime reason for this blurring is the existence and functioning of testosterone, a hormone secreted into our blood by the testes, which affects not only our primary and secondary sexual characteristics, gender, but also our behavior and values, our sex role. A growing body of research has shown that men with higher levels of testosterone in their blood tend to be more competitive, violently aggressive, and sexually compulsive than men with lower level. As expected, men who strive to exemplify the ideals of gender masculinity, through bodybuilding, for example, have higher blood levels of testosterone than those who do not. But also, and this is the catch, men who strive to exemplify patriarchal ideals of sexual masculinity through competing for positions of authority and hierarchies, for example, likewise show higher testosterone levels than those who do not. Hence, the physical and psychological effects of testosterone create a mutually sustaining interplay between the two kinds of masculinity. Men fight for positions of hierarchical authority, which increases their testosterone level, which in turn increases both their sexual appetite and their competitive aggressiveness, which in turn leads them to fight for even more hierarchical power and authority, which again stimulates their testosterone production, and so on. This testosterone-induced interplay of gender masculinity and sexual masculinity in the human male has continued for millennia, producing a sobering legacy of historical and social consequences that are plain for all to see. For the last 6,000 years, the human race has witnessed wave after wave of atrocious episodes of violence, such as mass wars perpetrated against other human beings, the wholesale slaughter of animals and the destruction of the natural environment, unexplainable episodes of mass murder and genocide, the systematic torture of political and religious opponents, urban street fighting and gang warfare, pervasive rape, and widespread domestic brutality against spouses and children. These outrages have been and continue to be overwhelmingly perpetrated by men. The cult of beautiful violence. Not only has the patriarchal male proved to be an omnivolent creature, but he has succeeded in creating entire systems of aesthetics, politics, philosophy, and religion to justify and glorify both his sense of masculinity and its devastating historical consequences. This justifying endeavor, which I call the cult of beautiful violence, regards the human male's capacity for inflicting violence as something beautiful, sexy, rational, just, good, and holy. For example, in patriarchal religions, we find God depicted as essentially the male ego writ large, the big man in the sky, whose essence consists precisely in his omnipotence. Before his awful presence, all mortals must tremblingly confess their faith, love, and adoration. All who refuse to do so, he will unflinchingly condemn to a life of eternal torture and damnation. Likewise, in history and politics, we find that it was reasonable for an American president deliberately to drop nuclear bombs on civilians in two densely populated cities. And we also find that it was a sign of progress for white Europeans to invade the Americas and annihilate nearly all their native residents. Finally, we see spreading throughout militaristic industrial societies a pervasive, although often unacknowledged, system of sadistic sexual fantasizing which thrills to the idea of uniformed men inflicting bondage, humiliation, and even torture on human beings. These examples all attest to the degree to which the cult of beautiful violence has saturated the psyche of the male and militaristic patriarchal societies. So we see that the history of patriarchal civilization has highly colored the nature of contemporary sex role masculinity in industrial civilization. And we see that sex role masculinity cannot, in fact, be separated from gender masculinity. In reality, then, each man's masculinity turns out to be a kind of physico-spiritual brew, deriving its constituents from body chemistry, ambient social conditioning, and the immense span of previous human history. Enter gay men. How do these circumstances regarding masculinity affect those of us who are also gay? However different we may otherwise be, we have all been born and raised within a militaristic, patriarchal, industrial civilization which relentlessly reinforces the values of masculinity as described before. How have the established masculinist values of the dominant culture, and especially the cult of beautiful violence, affected our sexual and spiritual lives? Is there perhaps a conflict between the male part and the liberation part of the very concept of gay male liberation? Arthur Evans is the author of Witchcraft and the Gay Counterculture. He's a regular contributor to White Crane, and he lives in San Francisco, California. Well, congratulations to White Crane on their 20th anniversary issue, and for more information, please check out their website, gaywisdom.org. So I got a note from Freddie Freeman saying, "Well, I've been doing Barapalooza now for 7 years, and I'm about to do my biggest event ever. And checking out the Barapalooza website at barapalooza.com, you can tell that it is a 4-day event of just incredible magnitude. The Mega Barapalooza 80s Rewind, going from April 15th to the 18th to 2010. And it includes headliners Kendall, Freddie Freeman, Elijah Black, Michael West, Martin Swinger, Rock Cub, Don Harvey, Roger Mapus, Jeffrey Altergott, Charlie K. Brown, Moose, Bear World, William Brown, DJ Calvin, Project Woof Tees, and Josh Lloyd. Presented by Roy's Hideaway and the Southern Bears of Atlanta. An outdoor music festival extravaganza with 12 bear musicians and performers. Clothing optional, pool and spa. Again, so check it out. Sounds like a great time. Barapalooza.com.
Cry out loud, but you don't know how. Jade.
Shoutouts for this show go to Music by Seal, New Facebook Peeps, the New Orleans Bear Club, and the Saints. Who dat? Thanks again to Joe of BearRadio.net, and always to my husband Rocco. You have been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 66. Please check out the Bear Soup page on my homely little home blog at www.ronserratia.com. That's spelled R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. Bear Soup is news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community with your host, Ron Serratia. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by Bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, spelled B-E-A-R-B-O-N-E-S-B-O-O-K-S. Look for Bear Soup and Bare Bones Books also on Facebook, and please email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Thanks once again for listening to Bear Soup, and remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.